camp over for the New Orleans Saints. We'll get a practice report, who's in, who's out, and we'll hear from head coach Sean Payton and Drew Brees, amongst others. Tigers wrapping up their camp as well and finally getting healthy. Coach O says they should be good to go for next week when they start playing for real. We'll talk about the Raging Cajuns, and we'll go around the NFL with the Schwab. Plus, what actor makes the most money in Hollywood? Those stories and more today, Thursday, August 22nd, 2019.
We're tied at one, one out, nobody on, bottom of the 10th. Mesa delivers, and Muncy with a fly ball to deep right center field. It is on its way, and Muncy has walked it off.
Pitch again, swung on, hit in the air, deep left field. Looking up is Benintendi, and that is gone. On to the top of the Green Monster, Bryce Harper with an opposite field home run. It's his 27th of the year, a two-run shot, and the Phillies take the lead. It's now 3-2.
Moronta deals.
Bryant swings deep to left field. Take the lead.
Good afternoon and a happy Thursday to you and yours. Thanks for dialing us up at 1037 The Game or 1037thegame.com or however you find us. We're just glad that you do. I'm your host, Jordy Hulper, my producer, Clint Domain, back in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB and 1037 The Game. It's Thursday, it's hot, it's steamy. No people happier than the New Orleans Saints as they break training camp. No people more befuddled than the Houston Astros. Every time they're a prohibitive favorite, they end up losing. They were a prohibitive favorite over the Baltimore Orioles and lost. And last night, an even bigger favorite over the Detroit Tigers, and they lose 2-1. Justin Verlander, at the end of the game, denied Detroit Free Press writer Anthony Fenech to attend his post-game media availability, saying, because of unethical practices in the past. I don't know what that is. Freedom of speech. I'm on the side of the Detroit Free Press on this one. Shame on the Astros and Justin Verlander for not allowing everyone to come in and listen and ask questions. I guarantee you if he had won, Justin Verlander would have let everybody in. Verlander, again, blocking a reporter for doing his job is disappointing. And I think Major League Baseball needs to step in and do something about this because that's not right. It's just not fair. It's not right. I don't care what the past is. You don't have to address the person that you are unhappy with. You don't have to look at that person, but he should be allowed to come in and do his job, plain and simple. But we move on. Got a busy guest list planned for you and yours. Cody Worsham will join us. We'll talk all things LSU, not only on the football field, but the basketball team is back in town after a 3-win in 4-game series in Spain. We'll get his thoughts on what he heard about that trip, so we look forward to him. And Frank Schwab will join us. It's another week of NFL football. We'll get his thoughts on the Cowboys and their, you know, what kind of message did Jerry Jones send? Yeah, he signed a player, but it wasn't Dak Prescott, and it wasn't his wide receiver, And it wasn't Ezekiel Elliott. It was a player who plays defense, who he didn't need to extend a contract to, but a guy who overcame adversity, a guy who works hard, who never misses practice, never complains, just laces up the cleats and does his job. I think a clear-cut message was being sent by Jerry Jones. So we'll talk to the Schwab about that. As the Saints began their final day of training camp, they were down eight players: running back Latavius Murray, wide receiver Simi Cobbs, offensive lineman Marshall Newhouse, linebacker Alex Anzalone, linebacker Craig Robertson, cornerback Marcus Sherrills, rookie safety Saquon Hampton, and defensive lineman Mario Edwards were not observed on the indoor practice facility during the stretching conditioning portion of practice. Not sure why Murray was absent, because he was at practice yesterday. It could be a veterans rest day, which the Saints have done numerous times for numerous players throughout training camp. Anzalone, Sherrills, and Hampton haven't practiced with the team since the preseason opener. Good to see wide receiver Ted Ginn Jr. back on the practice field after missing the past 2 days. The big story is, what are the Saints going to do with Drew Brees against the New York Jets? Because we know, as we have said in the past, there is no love loss between Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator of the Jets, and Sean Payton. And I think Greg Williams, who showed in the second preseason game that he will blitz at all times and get after the quarterback, he'll try to do the same thing to the Saints that he did to the Falcons, and they really got to Matt Ryan. So it's a fine line that Sean Payton and Drew Brees have to face. But here is Sean Payton talking about the plan so far for Drew Brees come Saturday night in New York.
I think our approach with him maybe has changed a little bit over the years. So, you know, you're getting a lot of live looks in practice. But I think, you know, in a game like this, we'll plan on playing him. How much, we'll see. But I think it's important for everyone else around him, too.
Got to get his timing with wide receivers and see how they all fare. Here's Drew Brees talking about facing Greg Williams and the Jets.
That's Greg's aggressive style. I like that aggressive style. You know, I mean, I think he's a very talented defensive coordinator and has had a lot of great defenses over the years, you know. So I think it's great preparation for us, you know, for what we could possibly face throughout the year. So I think the more I would prefer to challenge ourselves by going up against good defenses like that, as opposed to just stuff that's real vanilla, you know, that isn't going to, you know, give you stuff that, you know, you feel like is really going to carry over to what happens during the regular season. In the regular season, people are throwing everything at you, right? So I think that's what helps us get better.
We will see how long Drew Brees will play. Cam Jordan's another superstar on the Saints, hasn't been on the field yet in a preseason game, but he talked about the work he has gotten this preseason.
Whatever I'm dealt, I mean, honestly, I trust the foundation. I trust that, you know, at the end of the day, we as an organization have a plan for guys like Drew. Guys, I don't know if I'm in the same caliber as Drew, but guys that have been a part of the team for, you know, 8, 9 years, they've seen what you see every day at practice. You're going to see it again. So as long as you're playing with that type of speed, that type of mentality, I trust the process. Is that a Philadelphia thing?
Trust the process. Okay. Sean Payton touched on, we lost an iconic figure, former Governor Kathleen Blanco, right in Acadiana, passed away. And Sean Payton touched on her and what she meant to the organization.
I got here in 06, and she was our governor at that time. And it was, I know, was very instrumental in all the things that had to take place relative to the recovery. The last time she was here, not too long ago, was to go into the Saints Hall of Fame, and it was great that they were able to honor her prior to her passing.
Sure was. So the Saints have broken camp. They're going to fly out to New York. They'll take on the Jets on Saturday, and then they'll come back, do their regular routine, and get ready for the final preseason game, which means nothing. They'll rest everybody that matters, and then it's full steam ahead with the season opener. The LSU Tigers will have their final kind of walkthrough preseason scrimmage on Saturday. We'll hear from head coach Ed Orgeron next here when we return. This Thursday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets, over 60 in southern and central Louisiana. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. They've got specials all day, every day. Such a cool place to go into. It's just fun to look and walk around and see everything that they have. ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. More of the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Coming up next.
You're listening to the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, 16 minutes after the hour, welcome back. We're a Joe Burrow number away from LSU's season opener against Georgia Southern. 9 days away, quickly approaching. Ed Orgeron held his final media session of fall camp, and he sounded very optimistic about the status of his team. School was pushed back a week, which meant that they got more work in than originally had expected. And Coach O talked about, man, this team took advantage of the time they had.
I really feel that we took advantage of this week. Last year, this time we were in school. This year, we don't start school until next Monday. So I had an extra week of walkthroughs in the mornings and meetings in the mornings, and our guys have taken complete advantage of it. I think our coaches have done a tremendous job. We looked at preseason game number two on Sunday. We graded it extensively, especially on effort, miss assignments, technique, and then we moved right on to Georgia Southern.
Georgia Southern with that triple option. The good news is the health of the club, and he sounds optimistic about where the Tigers stand right now, and he said they should be fairly healthy heading into Sunday.
The first week was a great week for the offensive line. I think that the first week we made probably through the first week of camp with no injuries, and then we had a bunch of injuries with the defensive line. And then it flipped on the second week. We lost a lot of offensive linemen and a lot of defensive linemen coming back. But I feel now that everybody's going to be back on Sunday. I think we should, if nothing happens next couple of days, we should be fairly healthy.
One of the only starters still out is Braden Fehoko, but Coach O expects his big guy to be ready to go as well.
Just a minor camp injury. Shouldn't be out a couple more days. All these little camp injuries have been 3 or 4 days at most, and I expect him to be back next week.
All right, one of the big battles that has emerged out there is at tight end. Stephon Sullivan started off hot, but Thaddeus Moss has really come on. T.K. McClendon getting better. Jamal Pettigrew has gotten better lately in camp. Coach O talked about the tight end position. It's coming alive.
I'll tell you what now. Thaddeus Moss has had an excellent camp. So has Stephon. Those guys are coming along. T.K. McClendon is getting better as blocking. Jamal Pettigrew looked good today. That tight end position is coming alive.
Lots of talent there. It just kind of depends on you don't want to tip off what the play is, because if you put Pettigrew in there, you know it's going to be a block. If you put McClendon in there, you know it's going to be a block. Stephon Sullivan, probably going to be a pass. Thaddeus Moss kind of gives you a little bit of both. I really expect Moss to come through and have quite a season for LSU. It's always tough when you play a triple option team. You don't get to see it much. You certainly, as a team, don't practice that at all because you're practicing your offense, so your defense is getting used to what your offense does. Now you come up with a team with something completely off the charts, and that's what makes Georgia Southern so complex and so difficult, and you've got to stay focused. You've got to play fundamental defense, all right? You've got the quarterback. You've got the pitch guy. You've got to split the gap. You've got to play assignment, fundamental football. Coach O talked about Georgia Southern and their triple option.
We need it. Yes, we need it. David and I talked to on Sunday. We definitely need it. And we sprinkle in a little bit at a time. Our guys are getting used to it, especially the speed of the option. John Trey Kirkland's playing option quarterback for us. He may be the MVP the whole week. He did a great job assimilating their great quarterback and the speed of the option. We've got to be assignment sound, know what we're doing. They're a very good football team up front. We know what they're doing. They lead the nation in turnover ratio, plus 22 is amazing. So this is a very good football team that we're going to play.
Now, Georgia Southern, he just touched upon it, that turnover ratio. And I think Coach O, and rightly so, is a little bit jealous. And he talked about the turnover ratio that he wants his club to have.
It's a big focus. You know, we're a plus 12. We're seventh in the country. I challenge the team to be elite this year. And obviously, plus 22 is number one in the country. That's elite. So we want to be elite.
Plus 22. They got to get 10 better. 10 better. The thing about Joe Burrow, he doesn't turn it over, knock on wood. He's pretty good as far as passes, interception ratio. He's pretty darn good. So with that all being said and done, you're 9 days away from the start of the season. Every coach has questions, including Coach O, who has these lingering thoughts as he heads into the season opener of unknowns.
Tackling in open space, being assignment sound, option. Some guys playing for the first time under the lights, catching the ball. You know, Derek Skinner's going to return punts. I think he's going to be fantastic, but he's a freshman returning punts for the first time. You know, Cade York's going to go out there. He's been phenomenal in camp, but he's going to kick in front of 102,000 people. So those things, just new guys, see how they're going to perform. But I'm very confident in this team and this coaching staff.
All right, so some other news and notes. Things are looking up for freshman linebacker Dante Starks, still fighting some eligibility conflicts. But according to the coach, he's very, very close, and hopefully he'll be qualified by the time school starts. Now, that puts him behind the eight ball, and fortunately for LSU, there's a lot of depth at that linebacker position. And one player that O keeps singling out time and time again is inside linebacker Damone Clark, and called him, quote, a guy to watch. Clark, Jacob Phillips, Patrick Queen, all battling to work along the side of Michael Divinity. Another player that switched positions is Badora Traore, the JUCO transfer, now a senior. He was a tackle. Now he's moving inside to guard, and Ed O called him one of the most improved players on the team. You've got five offensive linemen, so he's probably number six, the first guy to come in off the bench at either guard or at tackle. One thing for sure, your defense becomes a whole lot better when the unanimous All-American Grant Delpit returns. And here's Coach O talking about his superstar back in the mix.
He looks good, and Christian practiced a little bit today. He looked good. The defensive line is – Apu practiced for the first time today. Tyler didn't. So the defensive line is still in and out. It makes a difference. It's Kelvin Chessel up front rushing the passer. And today he had an excellent day, and he seemed like he's healthy, ready to go.
So you've got three very visible players in Delpit, Christian Fulton, Kalevon Chason. If you can get some play up front with Lawrence and Shelvin and Aiku and those guys, I still think this has the potential to be the best defense that Dave Aranda's had since he's been at LSU. They were not elite a year ago. Not at all. They were good against the pass. They were gashed by the run time and time again. They got to get better up front. On the offensive side, Steve Ensminger, a tireless worker. He's there from 5 a.m. in the morning till midnight. He's got a little bed in his office. Coach Hill goes, I don't even know if he's gone home yet. He wasn't well-versed in the RPO and the spread offense as Joe Brady was, and that's why Joe Brady was brought in as the new passing game coordinator, and Coach O has raved about Joe Brady.
Been awesome. Awesome. And let me tell you something. It starts with Steve Ensminger. He's done a phenomenal job. They're in there. He's got a little bed in his office. I don't think he's been home yet. I think they go home. They in their meetings at 12, and they get up about 5. And he's done a phenomenal job of working. Joe's put in a tremendous offense. Steve has put in the wrinkles that we've done before in some cases, and I think it's been a tremendous mix.
Now we'll see. It's all fine and dandy when there's practice, but when the game is on the line, we'll see if LSU truly does not revert back to old habits. We'll see if they can come up with new creative habits to build upon. I am of the camp that I will believe it when I see it. And I hope I do see it. I really do. I hope I do see it. I think it's essential for this club. And it's essential that Joe Burrow get protected. A year ago, man, he was hit, and he was hit early. He was hit often. That offensive line just wasn't very, very good for him. So, again, that is the key to the season of success for LSU. Can this offensive line, which has probably had about 4 days of camp where they've all been together at one time, it's so ominously similar to a year ago when for the first 6 or 7 games, man, it was a new starting lineup every game. Every game. We'll see if they can stay healthy. Cody Worsham will join us next, the digital media director at LSU. We'll share his thoughts on some of the Tigers and the LSU roundballers back from Spain. They brought me nothing. We'll have that story next. ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. Whether you need gas for your car, tobacco products, an excellent fast food, or a good bottle of beer or wine, ShopRite has you covered. For those on the go, getting breakfast or lunch at ShopRite is terrific. Heading out on a road trip, ShopRite has you covered with everything you need for everyone in your travel party. So if you're anywhere in central and southern Louisiana, you'll find a ShopRite store near you, a one-stop shop for whatever you need. If you can't ShopRite at ShopRite, you just can't ShopRite at all.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers, and it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Okay, welcome back. 33 minutes after the hour. Always great to welcome in our next guest, digital media director for LSU. I call him a storyteller. He's a podcaster. He's got a new one out, Hey Fighting Podcast, talking about LSU football. That's our good friend, Cody Worsham. Cody, good afternoon, man. How's it going?
Hey, Jordy, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. You've been around LSU football for a while now. You've been on both sides of the fence, one as a kind of the outsider coming in. Now you're the insider staying in. When you look at this team, when you watch them, when you listen to them, when you observe them, do you have a quiet confidence about the level of maturity of this club, knowing the grind that they're about to face with the goals that they have in mind?
Yeah, definitely. I have a very good feeling about this team. I don't want to put any undue expectations on them. I think their ceiling is very high. I think they can win a lot of football games, but you're exactly right. There is a maturity about this team. There's a leadership within this team. There's a a caliber of character within this team that I really like. It's a lot of guys who not only show up on time for practice and put in the work and put in the extra work, but, you know, they shake your hand in the hallway. They look you in the eye when they're talking to you. Just a very grown-up football team. A lot of guys who have been there and done that and go about things the right way. So, you know, I think that just adds kind of a little bit of fuel to the fire in terms of expectations. I think when you have a team that has the talent they have and then you add in that character, that maturity, I think it gets people really excited.
Yeah. Great when you have it, miserable when you don't have it. And we talk about the stars, they get all the headlines, and we talk about the secondary with Grant Delpit and Christian Fulton, and deservedly so. But you did a story on, I think, an unsung hero, who I think is going to have a phenomenal year, and that's Jacoby Stevens. We kind of saw a glimpse of it last year. He struggled as a freshman, and now I think he's ready to blossom. What intrigued you about Jacoby Stevens, and what did you learn about this player?
Well, he's really smart is the first thing that stands out to me. I've known Jacoby just from covering him as a freshman and then working here at LSU during his sophomore year. One of the things that stood out was how good he was at the end of last season. If you look at his last two games, Texas A&M and UCF, when he kind of stepped up and played a bigger role, his numbers were through the roof. 20 tackles in those two games, 4.5 for loss. He had a sack, he had an interception, he had 7 pressures. He was all over the place. So that really stood out to me. But sitting down and talking to him, he's just a really smart, intelligent, high IQ guy. He thinks he's a football mind. You know, he likes to draw up plays in his spare time. He's got a notebook from when he was 8 years old that he just drew up all these plays in, and then he drew up defensive schemes to stop those plays, and he kind of just kept going back and forth with himself. He's a football mind. He's an intellectual. You know, he's a student. He studies John D. Rockefeller, and he studies history, and he pays attention to, you know, in the classroom and all those things that, you know, kind of contribute to the student athlete picture as a whole, and a guy that's just really, really interesting and really talented in ways beyond football. So, you know, he's a guy that I think is going to have a long, productive NFL career, and then when he finishes it up, he can do whatever he wants to. He can be a coach. He'd be a heck of a football coach.
Yeah.
He can go into any industry he wants to, and I think he'll thrive because he's got all the tools, both as a football player and then as a young man and an individual.
And I think Cody Worsham joining us. I read the story, and you talked about how he overcame this vision of perfectionism, and I think that's a great lesson for a lot of young athletes to learn. You're never going to be perfect, and you can't get down on yourself when you aren't. You just play the next play, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I really connected with Jacoby on, because as an athlete, when I played, I was the same way. I was very much a perfectionist, very much in my head, and I think that's something that a lot of high IQ athletes go through. Not to call myself a high IQ athlete, but I think, you know, Jacoby is a high IQ athlete, and it's one of those things where when you are a thinker on the field or in whatever sport you're playing, you can overthink. You know, your strength becomes your weakness, and I think that was the case with Jacoby, especially as he bounced around from offense to defense, kind of back and forth. I think he was really overthinking everything, trying to make the right play every time, and kind of quelling his instincts as a football player. And so David Mina just told him, you know, late last year, hey, quit thinking, you know, make the read and just go make a play. Don't hold yourself back by overthinking, by trying to be too perfect. Let your instincts take over. He did that late in the season. You saw the result. I think he's going to do that more this year as a free safety or as a quarter or a dime or wherever they put him on the field. He'll make a ton of plays this season for LSU.
And I think it's easy for us to say as older, they were just trying to get him on the field because they knew what a great athlete he was. So they're trying him on offense. They're trying him anywhere they could to get him on the field. Maybe he didn't take that as the compliment that it was, and maybe that's why he struggled. But he has certainly found his niche now, and that's on the defensive side. And I'm sure Dave Aranda has all kind of stuff planned to utilize him alongside with Delpit. Is there a better safety combo in the country?
No, I think it's the most versatile for sure, because both of those guys, I don't know if Jacoby showed it as much last year, because late in the season he was playing closer to the line of scrimmage, but he's going to be the free safety. So he can play center field. He can, you know, cover. He can go sideline to sideline and make plays and make tackles. But we also know he can get in the box and make hits. And then I don't think I need to say anything about Grant Delpit. We know what he's capable of. So when those two guys signed together in that recruiting class, I think this was the vision. Having two safeties that could really do everything. And now that this is the season, I hope that we'll get to see that vision come to fruition, that we'll get to see those two safeties interchanging and being versatile. And the way that Jacoby puts it is, when you have that versatility, you can't personnel from an offensive perspective and say, all right, I'm going to put the tight end in because that's the mismatch. Or I'm going to put the slot guy in because that's the mismatch. When you have guys like Jacoby and Grant, they can match up with anybody. And so then there's no mismatching, there's no personnelling from the offensive perspective. It comes down to who's going to execute better. And anytime you can get that on the defensive side of the ball, I think that's a huge advantage.
No question. Cody Worsham, digital media director for LSU. Coach O says they're getting healthy, and maybe this offensive line will have some a week of practice with continuity. That's the biggest question mark for me. What about you?
Yeah, you know, you got to see that offensive line come together. I don't think you've seen what they would have expected to be their first team offensive line coming into the season together, all camp. You know, Damian Lewis has been in and out with an injury at right guard. Chasen Hines has been in and out at left guard. Adrian McGee has been pretty consistently there at left guard. But the good news is you're pretty solid at tackle. You know, you have in Steve Charles and Austin Deculus, who I think are going to take steps forward this year. And then you're rock solid with Lloyd Cushenberry at center, who's one of the best in the country. And I wouldn't really be worried about Damian Lewis either. I think he'll be fine for the opener. And he's outstanding at guard as well. So really, for those five line spots, you feel pretty good about where you are. And then it's just that fifth spot, that left guard spot. You do need to develop some continuity. This week is going to be huge. This week that they're going through right now, where it's a little bit lighter, it's kind of a pre-preparation for next week against Georgia Southern. Maybe some of those guys can get healthier. Maybe you can get some reps together with Adrian McGee and with Chasen Hines. Bedard Traore has been working at guard, and I think he looked really good there. He's a guy that could play for you. So I think it is a slight concern, but I think the offensive line could turn into an advantage for this team. If those guys continue to do what they've done in camp, I've been very impressed with the way all those guys have played in camp. If they take that into the season, they stay healthy, they play together, I think it could be a good unit.
Yeah, and you mix in the tight end there. That seems to be, I mean, down the stretch we come, and it's a horse race to get to the finish line. I hear Thad Moss is really, really looking good. Stephon Sullivan, of course. But Moss has made quite the improvement. And I know he wants it badly.
Thad, to me, just from what I've seen, looks like the perfect third down guy for this team. I think he's a guy that can really move the chains for you. He has some dynamism to his game. I think he can make some athletic plays. But he almost reminds me a little bit of a totally different version of this, but what Jarvis Landry was for LSU in 2013, where LSU was, I think, the number one team in the country in third down conversions.
Okay.
Because they knew they could go to Jarvis. They knew he would get it. They knew he would catch it in contested balls and small little gaps and get open. I think Thad could be that kind of weapon for this team. Maybe not as dynamic. I mean, Jarvis is one of the best receivers in the NFL for a reason. But I think Thad could be that kind of reliable go-to guy. Hey, we need 6 yards in this play. We're going to run Thad and let him pick if he's going inside or out, and we're going to throw off of that and make the play. I think he can be exactly that for this team. And then I think he also gives you some blocking.
I like that.
I think he's probably a better blocker than a guy like Stephon Sullivan, who we know can be dynamic in the passing game. Thad's probably a little more solid in the blocking game there. So he gives you a little bit more versatility, and I think he's going to give you plenty of option in the passing game as well as a guy who's going to get your first downs.
Great insight, Cody Worsham. I would be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit of hoops. LSU goes 3-1 in their trip to Spain, and I'm really curious. Will Wade was spouting just euphoric words about Charles Manning. He says he's a winner. He's going to be a huge, huge component for us. I like that.
Yeah, when I went and watched practice before they left for Spain, he was a guy that really stood out to me. Just makes the right play consistently, can shoot it, can put it on the floor, has good footwork around the rim, gets after it defensively, can guard one through four, can harass from the perimeter, can bang bodies down low. It sounds like he had a good trip in Spain. Obviously, I didn't see any of that, but he really stood out to me in practice. And it's good that he's carried that over to the games. And that's without Marvin Taylor. You know, I think those two guys could be interchangeable at the 3-4 this year, but they could also play together. I mean, LSU was pretty good when Marlon played the four last year in smaller lineups. And he, I mean, Marlon jumps so high, he plays so much bigger than he really is. But Charles is a guy who can play the 2-4 if you want to go big. He can play the 3 or the 4 if you want to go a little bit smaller. And he's just really hit the ground running. He's got the right attitude, the right approach. He's all about being a glue guy, being mastering his craft, mastering his role, embracing his role. And I think he can not only do that, but I think he can be a dynamic guy for you. He can go get you 20 points if you need it. So I think he's going to be a huge addition to this team, add some real good depth to the backcourt, and probably compete and maybe even earn a starting spot as the 3.
Wow. I'm curious, what do you think of Watford?
Watford is just so versatile. You know, I think in some ways he'll replace a lot of what you lost in Naz Reid in terms of, you know, he can get you a double-double and he can get you 13 to 16 points in a game and he can get you 7 to 10 rebounds. But I think he's going to do it a little bit differently. His shot's coming along. He knocked down a couple three-pointers in Spain. He knocked down some three-pointers in practice that I watched. But I think he's much more of a guy who you can give the ball to, and he can kind of create a little bit. I mean, I don't think he's going to be, you know, 8-9 assists in games type of guy, but he's a guy you can run offense through. He can do dribble handoffs. He can set a ball screen. You can give him the ball at the elbow, and he can drive. Whereas Naz was one of those guys, you know, when it went to him in the post or it went to him at the high post, some days he had it and he was able to make plays. Some days he kind of was a little bit clumsier and still kind of getting used to his body, and teams could either, you know, sink down and rip him or really put some pressure on him. I think Trendon's a guy that can almost be a pressure release for you. You can give him the ball, throw it up high, let him go get it, run offense off of him, and kind of use him in a number of ways. So I think he's really, really solid. He's got a huge upside. He moves so well. He moves like he's 6'5 or 6'6, but it's really, you know, 6'9, 6'10. I think he's going to be a really good player for LSU. I think fans are really going to enjoy watching. He's smooth. He makes everything look effortless. And he's got a really, really good basketball brain, really thinks the game well.
I think he's a much more polished player than Naz was at this time of their careers.
Yep.
And so for that aspect, I think he'll be a better college player than Naz was. I'm not talking pro career, but just on the collegiate level, I think Watford's going to be a better player.
Yeah, I think he's definitely more polished than Naz was. Naz was very raw. He developed while he was here, but you even saw with him going undrafted and getting picked up by the Timberwolves, they still see him as a raw player, a guy that they can develop into an NBA star.
Yes.
I think Trendon comes in pretty polished. I mean, his shot still needs some work. He's been working on it this summer. It looks good. It's not great. But he handles the ball well. He's always under control. He passes well. He can protect the rim. He can rebound. There's not a lot of refining to do in his game. Yes, he's got to get better in some areas, but fundamentally, he's a very, very sound player. He plays at his own pace. That's what I like about him. I always judge players at this level, but that to me, that's a differentiator. If a guy can play at his own pace, the game never looks too fast for him. Skylar Mays has always had that. I think Trendon Watford has that same that same characteristic.
Yeah. That's a good positive. Cody Worsham, LSU Digital Media Director. Don't forget about his podcast, Hey Fighting Podcast, for all the inside skinny on the Tigers. Job well done. We always appreciate it, my friend. Have a great rest of your week.
Same to you. Thanks for having me, Jordy.
Okay, buddy, you take care. That's Cody Worsham. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We will wrap things up with our number one, Saints. Boy, you got a chance to win some stuff when you come back and listen to who I've got on next. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Humpert Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Yes, we play the field. For 11 consecutive years, one of the great partnerships in this state has been the New Orleans Saints in partnership with the Louisiana Lottery. And the Director of Communications for the Lottery, Kimberly Chopin, kind enough to join us now. Not one, first of all, good afternoon, Kim. How are you?
Hey, Jordy, you're doing great.
Not one, but two scratch-offs? I mean, I know this could be a special year for the Saints, but, man, that's awesome.
It is. You know, typically, when you launch a scratch-off game, the first year you do a particular theme, it does gangbusters. And then the more you do it, usually the popularity kind of wanes. People want something new and different. However, our Saints games just sell like gangbusters. People can't get enough of them. And so we've been able to do a Saints scratch-off for 11 years. And would you believe last year it was our most successful ever? So we decided, you know, this year we're going to do something even bigger and better. And that's why we decided not to launch just one game at the $5 price point, but to also offer a second game at the $2 price point.
Wow. So, okay, the $5, We Are the Saints, top prizes of $100,000. The $2, New Orleans Saints, with top prizes of $20,000. But what I love about this is if you don't win the cash, you're eligible for what you call second chance drawings. Explain those.
Right, and that is what's so fun about the Saints games, is you get another chance to win if your ticket doesn't win an instant prize. So what you need to do, and this works for both games, the $5 game and the $2 game, just submit $10 worth of any denomination. You know, so it could be five $2 games or two $5 games. As long as they're non-winning, fill out the back, stick all of those in one envelope, one entry per envelope, and mail it to the address on our website or the one on the back of that $5 ticket, and you'll be entered into another drawing. We're doing three second chance drawings. We're going to be giving away game day experiences, tickets for you to get on the field with your friends before the game and watch the Saints come running onto the field. That is such an incredible experience. Also, we have special suite nights for our players, so they can enjoy that with their friends. And then the grand finale is season tickets for next year's games, a set of four of those to every home game next year. So, and autographed merchandise.
Holy cow. What a great opportunity to – I think I'd rather have – the second chance prize than the other. Well, no, that $100,000 would be pretty good. That would work
yes,
for me.
That is true, but you're not the first person to say that. It's almost like people want to get a non-winning ticket so that they can enter it into the drawing. But please make sure it's non-winning. We actually do check that.
There you go. All right, so $5, We Are the Saints. $2, New Orleans Saints. One can get you up to $100,000. The other can get you up to $20,000. Second chance opportunities. That's going to involve a total of 38 other winners with experiences of a lifetime that very, very few are given the opportunity for. So job well done as always. So give me your prediction on the Saints this year. Are we going to the Super Bowl?
I mean, we were robbed last year, so it's got to happen this year. Payback.
You know, it's kind of ironic that you came up with two scratch-offs because for the last two seasons, the Saints have been robbed. So I think this is the karma with the lottery and the Saints, and I think it's Super Bowl heaven. Here we go.
All right. That sounds fantastic to me. Thank you so much, Jordy.
Kimberly Chopin, Director of Communications for the Lottery. You do a fantastic job. The spots are so creative. They're so well done. And we always look forward to talking to you. So go get your Saints scratch-offs. Be a winner. And Kimberly, thank you for your time.
Bye now.
Okay, you take care. That's going to take care of business in hour number one. We got a busy second hour. Hot topics, always well-received. Clint Domain in charge of that. We are efforting to hear from Coach Billy Napier, who had a press conference a little bit earlier today. The Schwab will join us. We'll talk all things NFL with him, plus a little daily history lesson, some birthday wishes,
live from the
much, much more. Hour number one, history. Hour number two, live, straight ahead. The Jordy Helper Show, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Number two up to on a hot, sultry Thursday, the 22nd day of August. School zones are in effect. Kids are out and about, scurrying to the car for carpool line, riding the buses. So please be careful. Stay off those cell phones. Just listen to us on the radio. We'll try not to say something that shocks you, but we will certainly try to inform and entertain you. We're brought to you each and every day by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. It's a discount outlet because every day there's a discount somewhere throughout the store. You can't beat the prices. You can't beat the selection. You can't beat the variety. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, I'm telling you, you just can't shop right at all. We do it every day at this time of day. Let's take our walk around the sports water cooler. Hit that button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious. Decidedly better.
Clint Domain, kind enough to join us. CD, what the heck's wrong with your Astros? They take these teams too lightly.
They really do, Jordy. It's amazing to see what's been going on with the Astros, taking teams a little too lightly. 15 years it had been since about a 400, 500-point underdog, according to the Vegas sportsbooks, had pulled off the upset of all upsets. It's definitely wild to see what happened. But I want to ask you, Jordy, last night, who's to blame? Is it the pitching? Is what Justin Verlander did, his complete game performance? Or was it Robinson Chirinos trying to get a little greedy to try and get that hit, get that cycle? Because he was good for a stand-up double, but he wound up trying to leg it out to get that cycle.
Yeah. I mean, I can't fault him. Those things are hard to come by. I just blame it on the bats at whole. They didn't produce enough. Verlander did his job for the most part. But have you seen Chuck Wood today, our fearless leader? Is he walking a little bit taller, a little bit more pep in his step now because his beloved Tigers pulled off the upset?
I have not seen him yet today, but I'm sure he is definitely all kinds of amped up on a Thursday afternoon. But, of course, I want to flip things over, Jordy, because we talked about this, I believe it was either Monday or Tuesday. We mentioned the Popeye's chicken sandwich. You talked about the chicken sandwich challenge. Last night,
yes.
I finally had the Popeye's chicken sandwich.
It's the best.
It is positively amazing. I think that it's an undisputed champ. Nobody can ever beat it. It's something about the way they make the chicken for the Popeye's chicken sandwich, because it's more breaded. And I'm like, because I just took a little bite, I'm like, oh my God, this may be the best thing I've ever had.
It's the crispiness. Come on now. It's the spices. It's the crispiness. It ain't even close. I love Chick-fil-A. Don't get me wrong. Waffle fries, top shelf.
Yes.
Their Polynesian sauce, unbelievable. But if you're going head up, I'm sorry. Love that chicken from Popeye's, baby. Love it.
You got to love it.
I was friends with Al Copeland. You got to love it. Al Copeland was a good guy. He loved him some hoops. He loved the Saints. He loved the Hornets back in the day. He loved boats. My God, he had those speed boats. Rest in peace, Al Copeland, but that boy knew how to do some chicken. That's all I'm going
to
tell you.
They knew how to do it. It was absolutely, Mike, I'm wanting to have one now that I'm just, the more I'm talking about it, and I'm sure Everybody who is listening within the radius of 103.7 The Game is hungry, if they haven't had it already, needs to get this in their life as soon as humanly possible.
Not to say a peacock, but didn't I tell you back a few days ago? I said, don't sell them short. I'm just telling you.
Well, I was never going to sell them short, Jordy. I was just going to wait to kind of have my idea of what it was going to be like. And then after further review, I'm like, yep, this is maybe the greatest thing that Popeyes ever did. And again, I'll admit it, Jordy, not necessarily a big Popeyes guy, not necessarily a big Popeyes house. But I will say this, the tide's starting to turn. It was going to look really good for him.
Get that little side of red beans and rice to go along with it. Dude, heaven.
I love it, Jordy. But now we're going to flip things over to, of course, everybody and their mama's been talking about this. It's the Zeke Elliott story. It just keeps turning and twisting and turning. And the most recent thing that happened just before we went on the air, actually, with the most recent offer to Zeke would make him the second highest paid running back behind Gurley's monster $57 million deal. Do you think that's enough to keep Elliott around?
I can't imagine why it wouldn't. And don't you think that Jerry Jones sent a message? I mean, he had a chance to sign any player he wants. He didn't sign Dak Prescott. He didn't extend Amari Cooper. He didn't do anything with Zeke. Who does he go to? The guy on the defensive line who suffered what many thought was going to be a career-ending injury when he was at Notre Dame. But all he did was work hard. He never misses practice. He never complains. He never says anything. He just shows up and plays. And what happens? Jerry Jones rewards him. He went to bat for Zeke Elliott when he first got in the league. Elliott got in all kinds of trouble. He tried to get the commissioner fired over Zeke Elliott. And now Zeke's doing this to him? When Jerry Jones said, I've earned the right to say Zeke who, he means it. And he does. He doesn't have to do anything for Zeke Elliott. He's got him under his control for 2 years. If Zeke doesn't want to play, Jerry doesn't have to pay. So we'll see. But he'll be there for game one. Promise you. He'll be there.
And he better be, but you got to think about it. That kind of money, it's hard to pass up, especially when you realize the fact that everything hinges on Ezekiel Elliott with the success. Whenever you just think about the Dallas Cowboys, if he's not there, I feel like this entire team, especially the offensive side of the football, will suffer, and they're not going to make the run that many in a Cowboy country think they're going to.
Well, he's been great. For 3 years, he's been great. There's no question about that. Just get on the field and play. You'll get your money.
Flipping it on over to the NBA, James Harden making a little bit of a headlines with an interview we had with 97.9 The Box. He was asked whether he was upset over missing out on a second MVP award, and he said he really wasn't. It was all about a predetermined narrative to him that affected the race, saying that it's out of my control. I think once the media creative narrative about somebody from the beginning of the year, they just take that narrative and run with it the entire year. And obviously this is all referring to Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak. I don't want to get into details. All I can control is what I can do, and I went out there and did what I was supposed to do at a high level. There's only a few other seasons that anybody has ever done that before. But do you think there is a little bit of a narrative to determining who's going to be the MVP, be it in the NBA, NFL, MLB, whatever league we're talking about? Do you think there actually is a narrative or a bias towards certain players?
Absolutely no doubt about it. Absolutely. And in the NBA in particular, very rarely do you see back-to-back MVP winners. They like to change it around a little bit. I think the narrative will shift back to LeBron James one more time to try and help him get an MVP award. I don't think there's any question. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I've said that from day one, some are going to get it. Some have no shot. So don't be surprised if LeBron becomes the MVP one last time in his NBA career this year.
I wouldn't be surprised about it at all, but I definitely have to say it's interesting to think about the fact James Harden kind of breaking it open and saying there is a little bit of bias towards certain players to be the MVP at the beginning of the year. It seems a little wild of a take, but I think it's intriguing. I think you definitely say that about the Rookie of the Year in the NBA. It feels like that's already determined before the year even starts.
In a lot of cases it is, but that tends to flip a little bit more so than others. But the MVP award, let's put it this way. Harden wasn't going to win it. Westbrook wasn't going to win it. I can promise you that. So it was Giannis's turn. And we'll see whose turn it is this year. Now you got to perform, obviously. But my bet's on LeBron. I think he has a comeback year, and I think he's going to get it.
We started off talking about the Houston Astros. Might as well wrap it up talking about the Astros and more so what happened post-game. You mentioned it earlier in the show about Justin Verlander. He denied access to a Detroit Free Press reporter from covering his post-game. And, you know, it just makes me wonder, Jordy, like, again, this is just personal thought process here when it comes to Justin Verlander. Yeah. Was it more because of the fact that he was a Detroit Free Press beat writer? Or maybe this was a guy that did him wrong in the past whenever he was in Detroit, because it feels like maybe there was something going on from that perspective. At least to me, that might have played a little bit of a factor as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no question it was from the past, and he said because of some unethical practices that he had. But again, you can't bar someone, you shouldn't bar someone from doing their job. That doesn't mean if they raise their hand, you ask him, what's your question? No, you ignore him, obviously. But you can't deter him from doing his job and getting the sound bites that is required of him doing his work. So shame on Houston for allowing that to happen. That's not good. And Major League Baseball needs to reprimand them so that this does not happen again. Plain and simple. It's not fair. There you go. You wouldn't like being told by Ed Orgeron you can't go in there and listen to him because you said bad things about him in the past. No, I mean, that's crazy. You got to let those people in and let them do their job. Ignore them, but let them do their job. There's your hot topics for the day. Well, go ahead, CD. What do you think?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think Coach O wouldn't necessarily kick me out of media availability because of bad things I said about him. I think he just kicked me out because of my Coach O impression.
that's pretty good, though. All right, there's your hot topics brought to you by the best hot sauce around, and that's from the great folks at Cajun Chef, the Biart family right there in St. Martinville for nearly 90 years. Through love and hard work and effort, they find the finest spices, they find the finest peppers, they put it all together, and they come up with Cajun Chef hot sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a bottle with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. More to come. The Jordy Hultberg Show, including Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. We'll talk NFL stuff with the Schwab and more. The Jordy Hultberg Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
All the best guests join the Jordy Hultberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
19 minutes after the hour, 9 days away from the season opener for LSU and for the Raging Cajuns, 475 have been named to the Senior Bowl watch list, 10 coming from LSU, including D. Anderson, no shot, Joe Burrow, shot, Derek Dillon, Michael Divinity, good shot, Braden Fajoco, shot, Blake Ferguson has a shot as a snapper, Christian Fulton, absolutely, Rashard Lawrence, absolutely, Damian Lewis, Stephon Sullivan, depends. 10 LSU Tigers on the Senior Bowl watch list. It's always good when you have seniors in your fray, so to speak. There's your leadership with the guys that have been there and have done that. Yes, indeed. So that's always good. The Raging Cajuns getting ready for Mississippi State. It's going to be a tall task. There's no question about that. But it's kind of in your backyard, and so much will depend on how the quarterback plays. How do you hold up on the line of scrimmage? That's always the biggest differential between those teams from the Sun Belt, the Southland, the AAC, and Power 5 schools. All those non-Power 5 schools have skilled position players. They're not hard to find. It's the big uglies that make the difference. And that's where you see the separation in things. Billy Napier, again, talked about, as he has all year long, has talked about that transition from the first year when everybody was kind of getting to know one another. He was getting to know the players are getting to know him, getting to know his staff, and it just takes a while to build that trust, to build that belief, to build that buy-in. All right, well, now they've got all that. The continuity from the coaching staff, another year with the players, they went through a spring practice again, now they've gone through fall camp, and because of that, Billy Napier obviously thinks this team is a little bit further ahead of where they were a year ago.
I do think that this team is further along because I think we know each other better. We understand expectations. And we've been through some struggles. You know, we went through some battles last year. The group of players that we have, they've grown. You know, so I think they're a little bit further ahead relative to the intangibles that we have. And we're probably better equipped to handle adversity. We've been in some fights, you know. We know what the struggle is going to be like, and we welcome it.
We welcome it, the struggle. The schedule, much more doable this year. But it's a tough start. There's no question about it. State will be ready. State will be decent. I'm not saying State's going to be great, but State will be decent. One player that has to step up and deliver, not only on the field, but leadership off the field. Billy Napier really likes Chase Rogers.
Yeah, Chase entered the portal, you know, probably 3, 4, 5 days after the injury, maybe even a week after the injury. Once he went through that process of, you know, kind of researching his injury relative to playing football again, what that was going to look like. And Chase came to us and expressed that, you know, may not even want to play football again. You know, just been through a lot. You know, same foot broken for 3 years. I don't think he's completely closed that door, but felt like changing schools, you know, going to college with maybe some of the people he went to high school with, where he had some friends, that type of stuff. So
Chase Rogers, boy, that's a tough blow, right? 3 consecutive injuries on the same foot. That ain't no fun. No fun whatsoever. We will update more on the Raging Cajuns as time goes by. But look, this is the time on every level. Players are done. They've had enough of camp. Never have college athletes more welcomed school than now. Never have pro athletes more welcomed getting home and getting back to their family life than now. Camps are breaking up. They get to go back to some sense of normalcy, but still with football first and foremost. Now, we heard earlier, LSU had an extra week this year as compared to a year ago when school started a little bit. They had been in classes already this week, but they had an extra week to work on things, and that was very, very pivotal as key components are coming back off the injury list. And they're getting back into the swing of things. And in particular, with the offensive line, you got to get continuity. And on the professional level, you're going to see Drew Brees play in this third preseason game, because practice is one thing. Games are a whole different level, whole different scenario. It's a whole different feel. It's a whole different look. It's a whole different attitude. And you've got to get on the same page with Michael Thomas and Ted Ginn Jr. and Emmanuel Butler and Austin Carr and the rest of the game. So it's very important. I'm not saying you play a lot, but, man, if you get one series and you take the ball down the field and you score, okay, Drew, thanks. We'll see you for the opener. Don't even worry about putting a uniform on until then. But if you go three and out, you give him another series and you see what he can do. Because you've got to get that chemistry. You've got to get that cohesive approach together. And that's what makes it so important. So you'll see Tom Brady play this week. You'll see Drew Brees play this week. You'll see Aaron Rodgers play this week. This is the one and only opportunity, the one and only shot you got. Now, for two games, we've looked at Teddy Bridgewater, and we've looked at Taysom Hill. And that's great. And they'll get to play again. They'll play most of this game, and they'll play in the – maybe you bring JT Barrett back and you let him play in the fourth preseason game. Because who really cares? Right? Who cares? Nobody. But for this 1 week, you got to do it. Now, LSU and UL have put theirs in the bed. Now it's all about, for the college players, getting their legs back, getting fresh, getting hydrated, getting ready to go. No more hitting. That aspect is over and done. It's all about the mental aspect now. Do you know your assignment? Do you know the playbook? Do you know where you're supposed to be when it's third and eight and you're on the punt team? Where are you supposed to be? What are you supposed to do? Because you got to get on that field quickly. You can't be daydreaming. And that's why they have all those coaches and those get-back coaches on the sidelines to make sure everybody is in the right position at the right time. So that's what that is all about. So never have teams been happier to break camp than professional football players and college football players. Enough. They've had enough of it. Now they're ready to get into game week, and that's when things really start ramping up. And that takes such a high level of focus and concentration. And that's where your players that don't play come in so heavily. You heard Jontre Kirkland being the triple option quarterback for Georgia Southern. So he's got to accept that role. And those other players have to accept their roles to learn the offense of the other team and to put that into play and do that to the best of their ability to train that LSU defense to get them ready for that opponent. So it's a big, big puzzle. But they're so glad the training camp is over. So glad. All right. When we return, the Schwab joins us. We'll talk all things NFL with him. Shutdown corner for Yahoo Sports here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. The sounds of the NFL. Yes, indeed. Preseason week number three. Let's get into all the big topics surrounding the NFL with our NFL expert, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports, Mr. Frank Schwab. Kind enough to join us. Frank, how are you?
Doing well.
What's more tiresome to you, the Zeke Elliott story or the Antonio Brown story or both?
It's probably Antonio Brown, but at least Antonio Brown is so weird that it's interesting. You know, I mean, I've dealt with holdout stories before. They all go about the same way. You know, this side says something one day, and the next day this side says something, and they end up negotiating through the media, and it's kind of a template. Now, the Antonio Brown thing is just completely off the rails. I don't know. Like, you could tell me any type of story about Antonio Brown right now, and I might believe it. So it's certainly been entertaining. I don't know if he's just like happy from here on out, but I'll tell you that hey, at least he's in camp. At least he's wearing a helmet. At least it seems like his feet aren't like totally burned on the bottom. So at least things are looking up there.
Maybe he should just put on the new helmet and then intentionally drop passes, run out of bounds, pretending like he can't see out of his helmet. And maybe that would give him the grounds, and the NFL would say, man, this guy can't even see out the helmet. We got to let him use his old one. I don't know. I'm just trying to help the guy out.
Right. And hey, again, you could tell me any Antonio Brown story right now, and I might believe it. But the expectation for any normalcy has been removed. Like, this has just been so weird and so just – I can't even imagine. Like, I know that the Hard Knocks kind of showed Gruden supporting him, and I wondered if that was performance. I John Gruden knows where the HBO cameras are. He's a very smart guy. So I wonder if that was kind of said, that, you know, knowing that that was going to make Hard Knocks, because – I can't – it's just hard for me to even imagine that John Gruden's sitting there and just totally fine with all this. Like, yeah, this is normal. We're totally good. I saw someone said the other day, like, I don't know if it's changed, but that Antonio Brown has practiced for a half hour during training. That's it. That's all I've gotten out of him. So I think it's been more this week. But it just goes to show, like, this is just a weird, wacky thing, and I guess maybe we're nearing a conclusion that's going to be normal from here on out, but who knows with him?
He just doesn't want to go to training camp. He just wants to show up when it counts and play from there. But I'm really curious about the Zeke Elliott situation. You talk about it's a cookie-cutter thing. He's going to be there during week one, but didn't Jerry Jones send a message? He could have signed an extension to Zach Prescott. He could have done something with Amari Cooper, but no, he took his linebacker who had that debilitating injury, but worked his derriere off, never complains, makes every practice, doesn't miss games, and he just goes out and performs. He kind of sent a message, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, signing Jalen Smith first, especially when he's in that same draft class as Zeke and Dak Prescott, maybe even if it wasn't a message, it was a message. You know what I mean? Like, that could have happened regardless of pretty much anything else. But the timing of it was just – it's hard not to put two and two together and say, you know, hey, this guy's here in camp. He's happy. We signed him to a deal. You know, so – Jalen Smith deserves it. I'm happy for him. That's great. But you do – like, look.
Right.
I think even Jerry said, like, there's not as much pie to go around anymore. I think that was a message, too.
That's right.
Like,
that's right.
You know, hey – you know, if you don't want to sign, hey, Dak, if you want this contract you're looking for, then, you know, money might be running out. Like, maybe that was to put the screws to all these guys a little bit to say, you know, we're not giving you $40 million a year, Dak, but, hey, if you want this $32 we've been offering, we still have the money for that. But, hey, if we sign Amari Cooper at $20, maybe we don't. You know, I mean, it's Jerry Jones, whatever we want to say about Jerry. He is a smart businessman. He really is. And I think that there's, you know, he's more savvy than we give him credit for. And I think that, yeah, it's great to reward Jalen Smith, and that might happen anyway. But I do think the timing of it, it wasn't coincidental. Let's put it that way. I don't think so anyway. And we'll see if that changes anything with the other three guys.
I agree with you 100%. Frank Schwab of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. I think other owners listen to two main owners. I think it's Robert Kraft of the Patriots because they win a lot. And I think it's Jerry Jones because he's just smart and he makes a lot of money. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and it might not even be Robert Kraft anymore. I think Jerry Jones is the most powerful man in the NFL. I really do. Like, I think he's more powerful than Goodell. I think he's more powerful than any coach or player you can name. I do think that Jerry, you know, he's just one of those guys. He's just that kind of personality where he just kind of takes over. And you know, he is that guy. And, you know, everybody does listen to him because, look, he bought the Cowboys for whatever, $400 million to turn them into a multi-billion-dollar organization. He knows what he's doing. Again, whatever jokes you want to make about Jerry Jones, that's fine. But he's the one laughing all the way to the bank. So I think he's kind of won this one.
You know, they the face of the NBA, when anybody talks about the NBA, they always say the greatest player ever was Michael Jordan. ESPN came out with their list of the greatest players per position in the NFL, with Tom Brady at quarterback, Lawrence Taylor, Deion Sanders, Deacon Jones, and the likes. If they had to make a statue of the face of the NFL, who would be the Michael Jordan of the NFL to you?
You know, that's a good way to put that question. If you're asking me, you know, who's been the greatest player in NFL history, or at least who has the best resume in NFL history, I think by now it's not even arguable. It is Brady. I mean, he's accomplished more than everybody else. Now, whether we want to get into the semantics of whether he's the greatest player because, you know, he's in a better system with Peyton Manning or John Elway or whoever else around him, I think that's perfectly fair. I think that's a fine argument to have. But I think we're just talking resume Brady's greatest. But the fact that he's really universally disliked by everybody, just because there's Patriots hate and the Patriots fatigue, and, I mean, you bring up Tom Brady, and not everybody's celebrating him, obviously. People don't like Tom Brady for whatever reason. So I don't know that he could be. When you say who's, you know, if you're building a statue outside Canton, the guy, I don't know that it is Brady. I don't, just because of the popularity part of it. Now, who would it be? I think that, you know, who epitomizes the NFL that way? You could even look at Walter Payton. I think Barry Sanders is kind of the one superstar player that nobody ever disagrees on. Like, who doesn't like Barry Sanders? You know what I mean, so I think Taylor, for all his faults, everybody universally.
I could give an argument. I could give an argument for a guy named Deion Sanders, who basically took half of the field away from you defensively, and then he returned punts and kickoffs for touchdowns. He was pretty special now.
Oh, he was great. He you know, wasn't much of a tackler, but that's okay because he did everything else so well. He's totally up there. He's one of those guys who you just, you know, everybody kind of just knows. Yeah, he was phenomenal. He was unbelievable. So it's a great debate. You could even argue, like, it's Peyton Manning, the only 5-time MVP. You know, he represented the NFL really well, and you know, he's kind of that guy who kind of lifted his teams a little bit more than Brady did, and it's pretty much universally respected, too. I think everybody loves Peyton Manning. I think, you know, you go back, Joe Namath is right, Joe Montana. You know, I mean, there's enough guys. It's interesting because I think when we get into debates about hockey, baseball, basketball, there's pretty much a consensus on who's the greatest of all time. Maybe some argument there, but it's pretty much clear that it's Gretzky, it's Jordan, it's probably Babe Ruth. Maybe Mike Trout is giving, I don't know. But in football, you can make a conversation. You can talk about Jerry Rice. You can talk about Lawrence Taylor. You can talk about Tom Brady. And there's no real right answer.
No, I'm with you. Frank Schwab, shut down corner. We could talk for maybe we need to come up with a Mount Rushmore one day and come up with the four. What coach would you take, by the way?
It's got to be Belichick. It really does. I mean, it's just at some point you just have to tip the cap. Like, you can't. Like, we can talk about Lombardi or Shula. I was always on Shula, not Shula, but Shula was great too. But Bill Walsh, I always thought Bill Walsh was the greatest coach ever because he can literally change the game. Like, almost pretty much every team is running some version of his offense that he kind of created out of necessity. But at some point, the resume just takes over, and Bill has done it for so long with such great success with basically the whole roster changing except Brady that I think it's just not an argument.
Right. And so funny in that Walsh didn't believe in tackling, and coaches like Bill Parcells and Vince Lombardi, we tackle every day, twice a day, just different philosophies, but both very, very successful. That's what makes it so intriguing to me. But Frank Schwab joining us. All right, we got a bunch of games tonight. Give me one game I should watch. Is there a good one out there?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I haven't even looked at the schedule. Like, I care so little about the preseason. I kind of just turn them on.
Yes,
but I'll tell you, like, the game, I think the game that we have to watch, and I know they play early, I believe Saturday, is Arizona. I think that, you know, we're so curious about this offense, Kyler Murray, and how they're going to do. And they face planted the other night. Like, it was a little frightening how bad they were against the Raiders. They had four possessions. They had 12 yards. The only two first downs they had were those defensive penalties. I mean, they gave up a safety. They were down 26-0 by the time Kyler Murray came out of the game. And nobody's mistaking the Raiders for, you know, I mean, the 2000 Ravens defense. This is kind of a bad defense. Just decided, all right, we're, you know, we're bits tonight. We're going to see how they handle it. And the Cardinals did not handle it well. Their offense was not very good. And Kyler was, I mean, he didn't play well, but he also didn't have much of a chance either. He kind of lapped just about every time he got the ball and snapped. So, you know, but kind of looked in the first game. So I think we get into this third game. I believe they play at Minnesota on Saturday afternoon. And it's going to be a standalone game, probably on one of the networks. And we're going to get a chance to see if that's a good defense in the quote-unquote dress rehearsal. Okay. Was that just a bad night against the Raiders? Was that kind of what we can expect out of this Cliff Kingsbury offense and this rookie quarterback? I don't know, but I think that's the most fascinating storyline going into this week because of just how bad they were. It was scary. It was like, you know, I've always thought, hey, you know, they're going to allow that 38-31 games. Like, that's kind of who Arizona is. They're going to play fast, and but they'll be fine on offense. Like, I've never questioned Cliff Kingsbury's ability to call plays. But you watch that game and you're like, wow, this is that was alarming, and maybe there's more to this that we need to worry about.
Yeah, another alarming thing, maybe we that's not getting talked about an awful lot, but Andrew Luck in Indianapolis. Do you expect him back to go, ready to go?
I don't expect him to start week one. I don't know if that means he's going to be there week two, week four, whatever. I don't think that's a season-ending thing. You know, we kind of shook up and worried because of what happened 2 years ago with the shoulder. And I get it. Like, the Colts, I don't know if they misled us, but it sure seems like they did. And Andrew Luck missed a whole season after a summer of optimism. And it just seems like the same thing's happening again, but this is a totally different injury. This is not a shoulder. This is not labrum repair. I mean, this is something going on with his ankle. I don't know what it is, but I don't think Colts know what it is exactly. But it seems like something he could play through, but the guy hasn't practiced. I mean, this has been basically a lost off season for him. Do you really throw him out there week one against the Chargers?
Yes.
I mean, maybe he's fully healthy. Yeah, sure, go for it. But I think that they have enough trust in Brissett that they're not going to rush this. Let's put it that way. So if I could bet, I'd say Andrew Luck's not starting week one. But he's starting sometime in September. Let's say that. And then if he's not, well, then, boy, that would be one heck of a story.
All right, you're the coach. You're taking Sean Payton's spot. You're the head coach of the Saints. You're looking. You got the New York Jets in New York on Saturday. It's a meaningless preseason game, but Drew Brees hasn't played in a real game yet. But Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator, has no love for the Saints because of Bounty Gate, and he blitzed every play against the Atlanta Falcons, and they beat the heck out of Matt Ryan. You going to play Drew Brees in this game, or are you going to play him a lot? What are you going to do?
I don't. Unless Drew, I'm sure Sean and Drew have a great relationship. And, you know, Drew says, I need a series. I need two series. I'm sure. I trust my quarterback. He's 40. He understands where he needs to be for week one. But I'm totally on the Sean McVay model of, you know what? These Christian games are stupid. We're not putting any starters out there. We're not. Well, why? What's the upside? Like, the downside is basically what we saw last year from the Rams. They played a little sluggish from week one, first half against the Raiders. That could happen anyway. That doesn't necessarily cause an effect. I mean, it's not absolutely because they didn't play starters in the preseason. They just had a bad half against the Raiders at home. So I think there's... The downside is overplayed. The upside is we're going to get out of August healthy. Okay. Like, that's the only thing that matters in August to me. Like, I think that, especially when you have a veteran team, when you got a guy like Drew Brees, does Drew Brees really need to play in August? I guess he could answer that question, but I would assume no. I think that he's playing enough big games that, you know, he gets sharp through practice. He could get sharp through things where he's not going to be in danger of, you know, getting blindside hit on a blitz. So I think that, I personally wouldn't play it unless Drew told me I needed it.
I saw something, and this was interesting. I hate preseason football. Maybe this is a way that we get to shut it down once and for all. The USA is getting ready to play in the World Games in basketball. They played in Australia. They had 52,000 people watch a basketball game. Most of those 52,000 people bought the tickets well in advance, thinking that LeBron James and Stephon Curry were going to be on the team. Well, they aren't. So Australia refunded all the ticket money to those people that said, you know what, I didn't come here to see, no offense to this guy or that guy, but I wanted to see LeBron, and that's what I was told, and so they gave him the money back. So if you don't play Tom Brady, you don't play Drew Brees, maybe the fans should say, I want my money back. That's not your real team, and maybe that's how we can get rid of preseason games. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a racket right now. I mean, what what can season ticket holders do? You can give up your season ticket because you got to pay for preseason games you don't want to go to? Okay, well, there's a waiting list. You know, I mean, it stinks. I think it's terrible. It's just bad business. Like, I've been to many, many preseason games, and none of them are fun. Like, they're just, I mean, I get it. Like, if you're a fan of the Saints, you want to watch. You want to see how the rookies look. You want to see some depth stuff. I truly do get that, but they're just, I mean, you're paying $50 to park. You're paying $12 a beer, $14 a beer, whatever it is now. I mean, for a game that literally is just meaningless. Like, it is, you know, especially that fourth one, it's just really terrible. So I'm all for, you know, basically, I don't even know that you need a preseason. College football doesn't have a preseason. They do just fine. So, but I guess, you know, if you're going to have two games, that's fine, I guess. But this four-game nonsense is from the 1960s and 70s where guys had to play themselves in shape and all that. That is meaningless now. And I think Sean McVay was kind of the first one to just kind of make a mockery of it. And I think a lot of other coaches are going to follow that. And I think that we're going to get to a point where it's going to, you know, like we had these discussions about the Pro Bowl. I think we're going to have these discussions about the preseason where we're saying, of the 32 teams, like 26 of them aren't starting anybody in these four games. What are we even doing this month? Let's figure out a better solution.
Yes. Yes. Frank Schwab, commissioner of the NFL. You get my vote. Not my paycheck, but you get my vote. Thank you, Frank. Enjoy some meaningless games, but we always look forward to talking to you, buddy. Thank you so much.
Sounds good.
All right, man, you take care. That's the Schwab, Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll have a little history lesson, some birthday wishes, set the stage for a fun-filled Friday coming up tomorrow. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana's sports station.
Who's got game and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Shout out from River Ridge, Louisiana. The East Bank All-Star Squad wins again at the Little League World Series. Egan Prather strikes out 10 as they win 4-1 over the Mid-Atlantic champion to advance. They're one win away from the U.S. Finals. Up next for East Bank Thursday, 6 p.m. against Virginia. Come on, River Ridge. Let's do it. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right, history lesson time. We go back, about 12 years. It was on this day, August 22nd, the year was 2007. It was a very bad day for the Baltimore Orioles because on this day, the Texas Rangers offense went nuts. They went literally nuts. The Rangers scored 30 runs. 30 runs. Aaron Boone, there's something to be said about the mercy rule, even on the professional level. 30 runs in obviously a blowout win over the Baltimore Orioles on this day, August 22nd, the year 2007. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. We're sharing a posthumous birthday with one of the all-time greats at LSU, well before his time, offensive lineman extraordinaire Eric Andelsek would have celebrated a birthday today. My goodness gracious. Happy 29th birthday to Adam Thielen, the great possession receiver for the Minnesota Vikings. Randall Cobb, happy 29th birthday to you for the Green Bay Packer. Another really good wide receiver. From the cooking world, Giada De Laurentiis is 49 years old. Ty Burrell is 52. Let's see, who else? James Gruden is 41. All right, that's all the time we have. We're out of here. Come on back tomorrow, Friday. Larry Holder will join us each and every Friday to talk about the Tigers and the Saints, and plenty more surprises. Thanks to our guest today, Frank Schwab and Cody Worsham. Job well done, CD. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg.